This is podcast number 183 for the Well-Educated Mother's Heart. Hi, I'm Marlene Peterson, and today I have a message to all you Pinterest fail moms. When I was a young mother, I had a couple of friends who were definitely in the supermom realm. Their homes were always immaculate, even though they had little children too. Their children were dressed to perfection, and everything seemed to run so smoothly in their homes. They had carefully planned family home evening lessons with laminated pictures and darling chore charts, which their children actually followed. They were great cooks and were always involved in the best activities, sports, music lessons. They were picture-perfect families. One of these friends even had a big cage of guinea pigs in her kitchen, and her kitchen was still always immaculate. It didn't smell at all. You could have eaten off her kitchen floor. I remember one day I popped in to visit and there were toys all over her living room floor and I silently rejoiced. Aha! She is mortal like me. And then she said, "Oh, please excuse the mess. I'm just disinfecting the toys." Disinfecting the toys? Is that a thing? Oh man, I'm such a failure as a mother. I loved these friends. But we had 8 children under the age of 11, and my husband was always gone. Our house was chaotic. I was either morning sick or nursing a baby. We were always short on money, and while I would have loved to dress my kids the way they did, I was more likely to be holding a pair of shoes together a little longer with duct tape. And I definitely wouldn't have recommended eating off my kitchen floor. I aspired to be more like them. But I always fell way, way short. Today, you young mothers are daily bombarded with images of perfect families in matching outfits, adoring husbands, and Pinterest-perfect homes. While I find no fault with any of these families, bless their hearts, I want to talk to you moms who feel like you are failing as a mother because you don't look like them. Who you are is way more important than what you do or what your house looks like. Let me introduce you to another friend of mine. I actually have never met her, but I like hanging around with her because she reminds me good things can come from messy lives. She was the youngest in her family, the 25th of 25 children. How is that even possible? She had 19 children of her own. Her third baby died when just a few months old. Then she lost twin boys when they were only a few weeks old. After 3 more daughters, another set of twins, a girl and a boy, died shortly after birth. Another baby died when her husband took the 3-week-old baby to a nurse to nurse him while the mother was recovering. This woman fell asleep on the baby and suffocated him, and in a panic threw the little lifeless body in the mother's arms in the middle of the night. Only 10 of her 19 children lived to adulthood, 3 sons and 7 daughters, and 3 of those adult children preceded her in death, one dying of a broken heart when she was only 32 years old, and another daughter dying in childbirth. Well, you might say, she must have had a very supportive husband to help her through things like that. Actually, no. She met her husband when she was 13 and married him at 19, but they only knew each other through written correspondences. When they started living together, she realized they had little in common with each other, except their stubbornness. He was 7 years older than she was. He never provided well for his family. He frequently got fired from his jobs because he was so hard to get along with, or he found fault with the job. He fancied himself a writer and accepted invitations to speak, but the offers rarely included payment, and he was expected to pay his own way. He was impulsive and piled on massive debts for the growing family. He used what money he had to provide the best education he could for his sons, but he kept his wife and daughters in poverty. His daughters blamed their mother's illnesses on his poor financial decisions. When she was expecting their first baby, things got so bad financially that she had to live in a boarding house, and after the baby was born, they had to live with her parents. At one time, her husband was thrown into debtor's prison. She sent him her wedding rings to help him pay off his debts and have him released, but he wouldn't accept them. When her husband died, she inherited his debts and was hounded by the debt collectors, one of whom even had her arrested. She was homeless and spent the remaining years of her life staying first in the home of one child and then the home of another and then another. One of her husband's jobs moved the family out into an obscure part of the country where she felt even more isolated. As they continued to fall deeply into debt, her husband became depressed and disappointed in himself and actually rode off one day, abandoning his family for 12 months. But the reason he left wasn't because of his shortcomings. He was angry because his stubborn wife would not say amen to the prayer for the king. That's because she didn't accept this new king as her king, and she would never go against her own conscience. The only thing that brought him home was that the house caught on fire, nearly killing their small daughter. The fire destroyed most of the house and their belongings. As he worked to rebuild the house, this mom took on the education of her children and became a homeschooling mom for the next 20 years. There was no formal teaching until the age of 5, but on their 5th birthday, her children were expected to learn all the letters of the alphabet. Textbooks were scarce, and she didn't like what she saw anyway, so she took it upon herself to write her own textbooks. Although girls were rarely educated in those days, her own father had encouraged her to learn, and she had read deeply the many volumes in her father's personal library as a young girl. She was a deep thinker and had grown up in a home where many interesting and prominent people came to visit, and she learned much from the conversations and debate she heard going on as she grew up. She lived in a time of great political disagreements, not unlike today, and things got so bad that those who opposed her husband's views tried to destroy the family. It was in this time of turmoil that her little baby was suffocated. One of her husband's enemies is the one who threw him in debtor's prison and tried to starve the family. It is suspected their house was deliberately set on fire a second time. This time the house burnt to the ground. The fire started in the middle of the night, and the poor mother, at first, thought she had lost her entire family in the flames, but miraculously, they were all found safe. She gave birth to her 19th baby 1 month later. While the house was being rebuilt, and her husband never did get around to fully finishing and furnishing it, it was necessary to send all the children to live in various homes of friends and family for the next year, some as far away as London. It grieved this mother to see her children exposed to worldly things she had tried so hard to keep away from her children. When they were together again, she worked hard to reteach them, but it changed some of them for the rest of their lives. One daughter fell in love with a man that her father refused to give permission to marry. The girl ran away and returned home later, 5 months pregnant. Still, the father would not allow her to marry the father of the baby and forced her instead to marry a man she didn't love. The baby died shortly after birth, as did her next two babies, and the man she was forced to marry became a heavy drinker. Years later, she finally divorced him. You older mothers can relate to the sorrows we feel at what many of our growing children go through. And yet, in spite of the messiness of her life, this mother changed the world, and she didn't even know it. This Christmas season, as you sing Hark, the Herald Angels Sing Glory to the Newborn King, think of this mother, for it was her son, Charles Wesley, who composed it, along with over 6,000 other hymns. As Eric Metaxas says in his story of her, few human beings have influenced the world as Susanna Wesley did. The manner in which she taught her children greatly influenced the work of her son, John, and the Methodist movement he founded led to world-changing revival and to such an array of social reforms as can never be calculated. The abolition of the slave trade and slavery are at the top of a long list that included penal reform, the end of child labor in England, laws against cruelty to animals, and the establishment of countless private societies and organizations dedicated to caring for the poor and suffering. The denomination he founded today claims 80 million members around the world, along with many Methodist hospitals, colleges, and orphanages. This is the effect of one woman of virtue. When she made the decision to teach her children, her girls as well as her boys, she knew that above all she must teach her children to love God. As Metaxas says, as far as she was concerned, the state of their souls formed the focus of her education. She wrote, though the education of so many children must create abundance of trouble and will perpetually keep the mind employed as well as the body, yet consider 'tis no small honor to be entrusted with the care of so many souls. It will be certainly no little accession to the future glory to stand forth at the last day and say, Lord, here are the children which thou hast given me, of whom I have lost none by my ill example, nor by neglecting to instill in their minds, in their early years, the principles of thy true religion and virtue. Through all the struggles and disruptions of life, there was one constant in her life. She never failed to keep her daily appointment with God. When the house was busy and crowded, as it always was, when the children saw their mother pull her apron over her head, they knew to quiet down and not interrupt her. This was her place to pray in peace. According to her children who were witnesses to it, just a few hours before she died, she awoke and declared, My dear Savior, are you come to help me in my extremity at last? And per her request, as she passed through the veil, her children sang a psalm of praise to God. I couldn't help but notice that she began and ended her days with singing. Was it a coincidence that it was through a hymn that John felt his heart strangely warmed, that set him on the course of teaching others to feel the warmth of the Spirit, and that he and his brothers used hymns to carry their message, not in man-made walls of stone, but out in open fields under God's canopy of heaven? As I was reading about Susanna, I learned of another woman of influence I'll introduce you to in another podcast. From her story, I copied these words that I hope you, who feel like Pinterest fails, will take to heart. If the work itself be true, much of the effects will be hidden from human sight. All labor which is brought to bear upon the soul of man must be supported by faith and confident trust that the blessings of God does make vital the good seed, and that it is as surely germinating as is the corn seed in the dark earth of the plowed field before the green shoots appear. To work only for results, to look constantly for them, to exhibit them to others, and to make them alone the ground of hopefulness, is but a shallow egotism rather than a true devotion. Close quote. And now I'll close with Eric Metaxas's summary of her life. Anyone believing that the life of a woman dedicated to her family must be less than optimal cannot know the story of Susanna Wesley. Despite poverty, illness, a difficult marriage, and heartbreak in endless forms, she used her intellect, creativity, time, energies, and will in such a way that can hardly be reckoned. The world in which we live owes much of its goodness in it to her life. And so will the world owe much of its goodness to you sweet, dedicated mothers who diligently move forward in faith, like our friend Susanna. Bye-bye. See you next time.